Hey everyone, I'm Chris Lesniak.
And I'm Rob Beyer, and this is
the Debate Math Podcast.
Debating mathy topics and mathy pedagogy with mathy people just like you.
Let's get into this month's debate.
Have you heard that there's a new AP math exam, AP pre-calculus? Yes, the College Board is planning to offer an AP pre-calc exam starting in the spring of 2024.
Before we go any further into AP pre-calc, we want to first bring to the forefront the recent controversy with the College Board and edits to the new AP African American Studies course. If you haven't heard, Florida officials claim to have been in repeated contact with College Board over content. However, the College Board has said Florida's concerns did not influence any revisions.
We have repeatedly reached out for months to the College Board for comment or participation in this episode and have yet to get a response. And while this episode is not specifically about the College Board or the AP African American Studies course, we would be negligent not to bring up this controversy and the potential harm that these decisions may cause, especially toward those who have been historically excluded and marginalized.
As hosts of the Debate Math Podcast, we believe all students should have access to rich classroom experiences where diverse perspectives are welcome. We believe learning is complex and nuanced, and we do not stand by censorship or erasure.
And we do not believe the College Board's response is sufficient. We do not believe that math and math education live separate from politics, and we acknowledge our own biases as we proceed with this discussion.
So while our focus today is mainly on AP pre-calculus, our opinions on the College Board are very present and may be part of this discussion. For us, the politics of the College Board are intertwined with the discussion about offering an AP pre-calculus course.
And with that in mind, let us introduce our lovely guests. First up is a man who needs no introduction, who has appeared on this podcast twice before. He is your favorite math educator's favorite educator, Dr. Chris Childs. Hi, Dr. Childs.
Hey, thanks. I've been on it more than once. Like, I feel like a special guest at this point, so I appreciate you all bringing me back. The first one must have been pretty darn good for us to do it again, so I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, you're a pro now. Can you remind our listeners where you are and what your current role is?
Based in Florida. I just consider myself a mathematics educator. And then for my fans out there that love to tattletale on me, I'm not representing any entity in this capacity for this podcast. I am representing Chris Childs, just math educator, based in the great state of Florida, which loves to be in the news for a lot of things, which I hope we get to talk about in this episode.
Next up is a high school math teacher, a mom of twins, and a Marvel movie fan, Joelle Cooper. Hey, Joelle.
Hi, guys. Really excited to work with you today.
Can you tell our listeners where you are and what your current role is?
Yeah, right now I am in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I teach in a very small rural school outside, about 45 minutes south of there, and I teach high school and middle school math courses, everything from Algebra 1 to AP Calc and Stats.
Thanks. Welcome.
And lastly, we have a principal researcher at AIR, the American Institute for Research in Arlington, Virginia, a self-proclaimed mathematics education change agent who has worked in hundreds of schools across the country and the world, also a 2021 NCTM Lifetime Achievement Award recipient, Steve Linewand. Hi, Steve.
Hi there. Nice to be here.
Glad to have you here. Can you let us know where you are and what your current role is?
So I'm semi-retired and still attached to AIR. I'm currently in Santa Fe, New Mexico, because we've been doing this winter Western vacation. But we really live halfway between the White House and the Capitol, downtown Washington, D.C. And when we're not there, we're hanging out with our granddaughters in Durham, North Carolina. So you never know where we are. We get to travel all around the country, all around the world. We get to play more than we work, and life is pretty good. And I'm honored to be here.
Glad to have you here.
So speaking of controversy, we want to ask each of you the question that we ask all of our guests. When did math first become controversial to you? And we're going to start with Dr. Christopher Childs.
For me, it became controversial when I learned of how many people have been excluded from the math experience. And what do I mean historically? I was taught, as most are taught, mathematics is a Greek-based subject matter. The Greeks did everything. They founded everything. They gave us Pythagoras' theorem, et cetera, et cetera. But then when I found out and realized every culture contributed to mathematics, that's when it became controversial. That's when it honestly became hurtful. that so many people have been excluded from what is mathematics? What does it mean to be a mathematician? Even when we look at gender identity pieces, who is typically seen as a mathematician? Some old guy. So for me, it became controversial and changed my life when I began to wake up and understand how many people contributed, the gender piece, the identity piece, and all of those facets that really make up the beauty of mathematics. And then I set out, how do we change this narrative so every child, regardless of their identity, can see themselves as a mathematician and make historical connections to mathematics and then utilize mathematics as a catalyst to change the world?
Wonderful. Thank you. And Joelle, when did math first become controversial to you?
So math first became controversial to me when I was in an upper-level college math course, and the professor looked at all of us and said, wow, there's a lot more girls in this class than I'm used to. And right then I realized that my only goal in life was not only to make kids love math, appreciate math, and learn where it came from, but to also make girls understand that they really can do this. And it doesn't matter what any professors tell you or anybody you meet along the way.
Thanks, Joelle. And Steve, when did math first become controversial to you?
So controversial. I mean, where I learned about the wall and where I learned that math sorts people and it's really a downer as much as it's something controversial. Freshman year at college, math was easy. I sailed through math. I got 800s on my SATs and I got fives on my AP test. And it just wasn't a problem. And I end up in Honors Calc 3, which is exactly where I was supposed to be. And we get to Stokes' theorem, and it made absolutely no sense. I realized that I finally hit the wall, that math had done to me what it does to everyone else at some point. It sorted me out. I believed that I just wasn't good enough. And so it was easy to switch to economics. But years later, that experience is what sensitized me to how the system is structured to sort people out and tell them they're dumb for no good reason. I mean, I could understand Stokes' theorem if somebody showed me a different way of doing it, but I wasn't blessed with that. I was, you just can't do it the way we do it on the board. We filled six boards with all of this teeny symbol manipulation, and you aren't smart enough. Well, who knows? That's my first experience with math is controversial.
Wonderful. Thank you. And thank you all for joining us today. With that, let's get into the debate. We begin with opening statements from each of our speakers. You each have 2 minutes to present your opening arguments about AP pre-calculus. And we are starting with Dr. Chris Childs. Dr. Childs, you're up first and your time begins now.
As I think about this subject matter of AP pre-calc and the College Board creating a new course, I want to think to earlier what was said in this episode, in the opening by Steve. Math has been used to sort folks. It has not been used with its original intent to showcase and make sense of the world. So as we continue to make these new offerings, provide these new courses, we need to ask ourselves as math educators, what are we doing this for? Is it to help children? And I say children, you'll find out I don't use words to as they're all children to me. Make sense of the beauty of mathematics, see how mathematics can be applied to their real lives? Or is the purpose of these courses, especially these AP courses, just to continue to create division within this country of the have and have nots? You're smart, you're not smart. When are we as math educators in this place? And everybody's a math educator. I don't get into, I teach this. Everybody's a math educator because we all do math at some point. When are we going to step up and rise up to the occasion and do something different on behalf of children? Majority of children do not have access to these courses that we keep creating. They don't. When we look at our highest level courses, we see who is in there and it's by an intentional design. When are we going to step up as math educators and address the elephant in the room, address the systematic barriers that we as adults keep putting in place for every child to receive a high quality educational experience? We're in 2023. We have all of this technology out there. Depending upon when this episode launches, I know you've heard of ChatGPT, which is changing the world. Are we willing to harness the technology and harness it for these children to change what we do? Or are we going to wait and literally become extinct like a lot of those dead Greek mathematicians, which I learned about, because we're refusing to change, we're refusing to evolve, and we're refusing to put children first in the decisions that we make of who can become a mathematician, what does pre-calculus mean? And then as we dive into what is the purpose of the College Board in 2023.
Amen.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, thanks, Dr. Childs. And now next, Joelle. Joelle, you are up. You have 2 minutes and your time begins now.
So if a student is taking this course to prepare for AP Calculus like it's intended, I don't see too much benefit as for helping them in college, because if you are a student who's going to be taking AP Calculus in college, no school is going to give you a credit for pre-calculus. They're going to expect you to start in Calc. So maybe you'll get some elective credit. You probably won't, but there's no real benefit to taking it, especially since there's only 3 units that are mandatory, and that's rational functions and polynomials, logs and exponentials, and trig. And in any true honors Algebra 2 class, 2/3 of that material is already covered. So I don't believe that there's enough material that'll take up the full year. And sure, they can do projects and they can teach them how to use different calculators and applications, but I just don't think the material's there enough to truly make it authentic. And it seems like, at least in my district, anytime they slap AP on, the kids know they're going to get a GPA boost. So are you going to get kids that truly love math and they want to push themselves and they want to learn? Or are you going to get kids who are GPA hungry and only care about scholarships, the bottom line, and getting into college? Or their parents are going to push them into these classes because that's where they think they should be? It's going to decrease the authenticity of the course and not let the teachers teach to that AP level. So the other thing I have with AP Pre-Calc is that if the test takes 3 hours and it's only testing the 3 units, I think that's way too long. And AP is just trying to make money off of this. That $97 that the kids have to take, if they can afford that, if they're lucky enough that they have a school that pays for it, that's a lot of money to have very little benefit to their future in college. My final point in my opening statement is, where is it going to end? If they're going to take this down to AP pre-calculus, are they eventually in 5 years going to roll out AP geometry, AP algebra 2, and just keep throwing this AP label out to make money? Or do they really care about what these kids are learning and further proving the love of math and the understanding of mathematics?
Thank you. And last but not least, we'll hear from Steve Leinwand. Steve, you have 2 minutes and your time begins now.
So I love being last. It allows me to build on the wonderful things you just heard from Joelle and from Chris. I call this the case against buying into AP Pre-Calc as currently designed. Let's begin with AP Calculus. Whether AB or BC, we all understand that it is a college-level course for which high schools can offer students college-level credit. Colleges own that course, and we in high school are basically left to do what they ask us for. We are, you know, in this position, but let's be clear. What they ask for in AP Calc hasn't changed very much for over 50 years. It's still lots of increasingly obsolete symbol manipulation. It provides limited use of technology. It's far more skill-oriented than conceptually oriented or focused on models and applications. And we know that most of Part 1 items can be done with Alexa and with Google. So we're not really pushing things ahead. But be that as it may, I can't tell colleges what they ought to be doing for their calculus class. I can tell people, I understand why we do AP Calc, but I do not want AP Pre-Calculus poisoning the well. So along comes AP Pre-Calculus, the same 3 hours, the same $120, the same number of multiple choice and open-ended questions, the same limited access to technology, the same syllabus based overwhelmingly on symbol manipulation. But this isn't really a college course. That's why this is so frustrating. In many institutions, as Joelle just said, Pre-Calculus is a remedial course. It's a high school course. And now the College Board seeks to entrench all of the worst aspects of AP Calculus into AP Pre-Calculus, which will make it even harder for any of us to update and invigorate and enhance the pool and the access to Pre-Calculus and Algebra 2. Yes, as a result of serious pushback, the College Board in February scaled back the content of AP Pre-Calc. I'm very happy about that. They took out matrices, vectors, conic sections, parametric equations that there was no universal agreement on anyway. Those were sort of things that some colleges wanted. But now we have at least a course that's reasonable. I do believe it's also a course that overlaps tremendously with what should be a combined pre-calculus algebra 2 course, but we'll get to that later. And so I think there's lots of room for the College Board to change. And my last line is, as I'm going to try and make the case, the bottom line should be, show us the exam. no school should be buying into this thing until we see the test and see that it actually aligns with our beliefs about what is good high school mathematics.
Thank you. Wow, that was a great opening from all three of you. So, such passion. I see a lot of concern across the board here about AP Precalc, and that's partly why we invited you all on here to hear your thoughts on this. I'm going to back up for a second and maybe take us on a bird's eye view overall. You're talking about AP Precalc, but I'm just wondering, are APs still important or relevant? Like, should we be investing time in them on a grander view? And anyone can jump in on this.
I think the answer is yes. I think there is room for some kids to have access to college courses. I agree with the College Board trying, although it's a money-making operation, I agree that we ought to have more kids in that position. I love the idea of doing biology, chemistry, physics in some particular order, and then every kid has access to, as a senior, an AP physics or an AP chemistry or an AP biology as it follows it up. So I don't think the whole program is horrible. I think that we have to recognize that it has to stay within the college domain where we simply say, okay, it's a college course.
So, and building off of that, I do teach in a very small, very rural district, and a lot of our students are economically disadvantaged. So our school, my kids are lucky enough that our school pays for the test for all of our kids. And that's an opportunity to get college credit that they may not have at another school, and that might save them money down the road. And I agree with Steve 100% in his opening. I don't fully agree with the material that's in AP Calc that I have to teach, but I think it's a good opportunity for my students to get college credit and have exposure to that, that when they go to college, I'll get emails, I'll get phone calls, I'll get messages from them, their parents, their siblings saying, I am a lot better off because I had that upper level math class than a lot of my friends are. And I think there is value in that.
So I want to push back. So why would a child take AP Precalc as opposed to just taking a course at the local community college, the local state college, or nowadays, with the pandemic, we've seen folks pivot to online. Why not take a course with the actual college professor versus a possible course at a high school level with a teacher who may or may not be college professor material? And I know our listeners are going to get up and roar and be tweeting me for that comment, but let's be real. Is everybody equipped? And again, some of the secondary posts will say, well, everybody's not equipped to be a professor, but there's a different experience from someone who is in an AP course versus a college course connected to university.
I don't have any problem with that. In fact, I think that that is an incredibly important option. I think the dual enrollment and giving kids credit in that way makes sense. They wouldn't need to do the AP, but I think that we also want to provide as many options as possible. And the AP is still, if they make some adjustments and all, I think is a reasonable place for some kids to have access to this opportunity. And as much as Joel and I say, you know, that you're not going to get credit, there are a whole lot of schools for whom it is not remedial course. But in fact, you do get credit for it. And so if it provides those kinds of opportunities. But again, I just cannot emphasize enough, it has to be a test that makes use of technology. It's got to be a test that gets at conceptual understanding. It's got to be a test that does more than just tons of symbol manipulation. And that's what I read in that syllabus now. And until they show me a test that has some of the same qualities of assessment that we see on the SAT, where Desmos is now going to be available for the entire test for all kids. I mean, stop, you know, full stop. If the College Board is doing that for the SAT, then why is this AP thing differently? Well, we know why. Because the college professors do not want them to use that stuff because it upsets their wonderful little apple cart. Well, it's time for us to say, either you upset that apple cart, or we're going to do everything in our power to upend your College Board business model for the low-hanging fruit of AP pre-calculus. That's a harsh statement, but I think that's the reality that we face right now. I mean, it is no secret to anybody that the College Board is not thriving. The pandemic hurt them. They have done bonuses to their salespeople to sort of get sales for this test or people signing on. I mean, that's never been done before. This test was developed in 3 years. It takes the College Board 5 to 7 years to do a test. I think we know it's like, oh, well, you know, we got pre-calculus. Let's go there. You know, the fact that it really is a high school course. Well, you know what? I can live with that. If in fact the College Board makes a commitment to a better test and to devoting, give me a number, 30% of the proceeds from this test to the training and the improvement of the knowledge base of high school math teachers all across the country. That's what I'm looking for. I'm willing to cut deals with them and sort of look the other way on some of this, but not for a test that isn't worth it.
But we have to ask ourselves, if I'm not mistaken, some districts, teachers get additional funding for teaching the AP course, and then they get additional funding if they have a good percentage of children passing the test. So now the question is, for a math ed community, are we willing to cut off our own pockets to actually address something and change the system? Or are most of us going to say, whoa, I agree it could be better, but hey, I want the money?
Well, I bet my quick answer to that, Chris, and I think it's an incredibly important point, is in the schools that I love the most, the same human being who is teaching AP Stat and or AP Calculus is also teaching the special ed or the low-level Algebra 1 with the expectation that you're so good, let me see you make a difference with these kids. And so I think that if, in fact, we pay people, pay them. I can't worry about that. I can't control the contracts that get negotiated. If schools want to honor that, fine. But it ought to also entail that anyone who is getting benefits from that is also expected to churn out high levels of results for the most problematic ninth graders in that high school. And I don't think that's all that hard to do if you have a little leadership on the part of school administrators.
Let's reframe it. Not say problematic, but the children who need the most. If you're the best, you should be teaching also the children who need the most. When I was department chair, that was my big thing. Oh, you a rock star? I give you an AP course. Also going to give you a course where the students who need the most support, and show me you're a rock star. Because oftentimes, and I was a former high school teacher, and the first year, I got all the courses no one wants. But are we willing, if we're so good as educators, to switch that model and provide other folks opportunities and really showcase if you're worth it? And then I challenge to the College Board, y'all got to do better. But as a math ed community, for them to do better, we need to stand together. Are we going to offer AP pre-calculus? Or are we going to say, this is not right, we're not doing this, and force them to change? Oftentimes, we bend over backwards and never force these big organizations to change. They keep making money. We'll, in a faculty meeting, complain, and nothing ever happens.
A conversation with a bunch of state math leaders at lunchtime today. And the topic was pathways. And obviously, when you start talking about pathways in high school, you can't escape the dominance of calculus. The fact that calculus is rigor and everything else is like second and third class. One of the suggestions that came up is that the math community really needs to stop and say, you're going to tell me that these part one items on the AP calculus test are rigorous when Google and Alexa can do these things, when no one in the real world uses the chain rule anymore? It's like, oh, there's a way to find the integral. Fine. What's important is, what the heck is the integral? How did it come about? What do we mean by infinite, sums of rectangles? And the same thing with the derivative. And then look at part one on the AP Stat course. It's like day and night. I mean, that's rigorous. The fact that somehow we think that AP Stat is a second-rate course is absurd. So there's lots of work that we can do. And I think that when we make that case, it takes some of the pressure off of the AP Pre-Calc.
So what Chris was saying, I am the teacher who teaches AP Calc and AP Stats and regular Algebra 1 and Honors Algebra 1 and a couple other classes in there too, small school problems. I don't get any money for doing any of those things. So I would, hopefully somebody at my school listens to this and realizes people are getting paid for these things. Just kidding. I just want my kids to love math and do well, obviously. But I also tell my kids, if you're going into those engineering fields, yeah, calculus is going to help you in your life. But everybody else, AP Stats is the way to go. And my kids always laugh at me, like, you love calculus. You teach calculus. Yes, I do. I love calculus. I use calculus. But you're all going to use stats. And I absolutely love the AP Stats test. There are some things I would change. I think they're a little bit harsh on wording and interpretations and sentences and has to be perfect. But that part one on AP Calc, I tell my kids, I said, you guys are here. You know this stuff. You better get part one right, because there is absolutely no thought into it. Just drill and skill, answer it, move on, accept your one point and go. And that AP stats test, that's a rough test. Like those six questions at the end with that investigative task, I would love something like that where they can apply some calc concepts.
So I want to interject real quick. So I want to bring it back to AP pre-calc because we could all talk about AP stats, AP calc, like all day. But going back to the AP pre-calc, because actually, Joe, I'm going to come back to you. Because you said this in your opening statement about where does it end? So let's say like as a district, maybe it's a rather large district and they are now going to offer AP pre-calc, right? So where does the College Board, you know, stop their AP status? Are they going to expand? Like, is that a real question to ask? And how, as math educators, Joel, like, where are we going to put that line in the sand and say, no, we're not going to do any more AP? And I know, like, Dr. Childs is in Florida, and I know, like, AP third grade is probably coming soon, but I'm saying, like, where does it stop? AP what? Because right now it's AP pre-calc, where do we go from here?
Yeah, and that's terrifying to me because I know that they can prey on schools. I don't know if it's like this everywhere. I've only taught in Pennsylvania, but we get bonus points on our school assessment profiles every year for the number of students that take AP tests. So why wouldn't AP go to, or College Board go to school district and say, hey, you want to boost your scores? Do AP pre-calc. Hey, maybe we are going to do pre-AP Algebra 2 or AP. I don't know that they could actually pass an AP Algebra 2. That class doesn't exist at the college level at all, where pre-calc we know does exist in some capacities. But why, they could easily target those schools to make that money and say, hey, you want to boost your school performance profile and get more people wanting to come to your district? And so do this, bring AP pre-calc in. I will say my school did draw the line. We said no AP pre-calc. We can do more in our honors pre-calc class. And we have a lot of GPA hungry kids. I talked about that earlier too. So bringing AP, I don't see any reason for them to stop because they can make more money. And if they are a business, why wouldn't they? But I do think it takes away the authenticity of math and just sorts kids even more, like we started talking about at the beginning.
But that's the problem. We keep focused on the business of College Board, but what is the best for children?
Is definitely best, not the business.
Right. Is it best for them to keep having these AP courses? Is it best for the privileged folks to know, even if I don't pass the test, at least I can boost my GPA, which is going to help me get a scholarship? Or is it best to actually get rid of this whole College Board thing and think of a whole nother route that's going to be more beneficial for children and still prepare them to go into college? I know I'm in Florida, and there's no secret I'm in Florida, and it's no secret what is happening here with the different College Board pieces. But at what point do we do what's best for children? And I get you have to make a living. I'm not against anyone making a living, but I am against it being at the expense of children. And also at the expense of teachers, because we're literally just slapping a name on the course, call it a pre-calc, call it Algebra 2. But again, when it comes to African-American studies, we can't do that particular course. So as a College Board, are you really caring about children? Are you really trying to prepare them for college? Or are you just playing the money game and the profile game? If you're going to do right, do right. If not, you should not exist, in my opinion.
So the key here, I think, is the test. The test drives what's taught. We all know that. The tests are released. We get to see all of it. This issue of what will best serve kids. I believe that if the College Board was to recast this pre-calculus course as a two-hour exam, no colleges have three-hour final examinations. We asked that question when we met with some of the college people on their advisory committee, an hour and a half, 2 hours. So why is this course 3 hours? We asked about technology. They said, well, it depends upon the professor. Well, that's really helpful. Okay, the professors decide, well, we don't have that option. Okay, you're going to, you know, tell us what you can do and what you can't do. But if it significantly increased the proportion of the test, including all of the part two questions that allow technology, I think that serves kids. That sends a powerful message. Just like having Desmos on the College Board SAT is sending a message that I think is incredibly important. And we reduce the cost to $80, as I said. If we significantly decrease the number of symbol manipulation skill items and increase the focus on conceptual understanding, I mean, that's what we want to be taught. That's what's critical, hand in glove with the technology. If we significantly increase the number of items that are problem solving applications and modeling, then we, I think, have a test that we say, hey, prepare kids for this test. And that changes some of the ground rules and some of the incentives for Algebra 1 and for Algebra 2 in all the right ways that I think serve kids and that move us out of this situation with problematic inertia.
I want to just ask a little bit more about the test itself for a moment here. So like, Steve, you said there were four sections at once and it got reduced to three. So it got reduced.
Yes.
And Joelle, you brought up that you think it's like, it's not enough. It's kind of a repeat of Algebra 2 in some sense. So can any of you tell us a little bit more about what you do know that it's supposed to be on it? At least I know we don't have a test in front of us yet.
The latest version goes back to what we all agree are the key elements of a pre-calculus course. That is polynomial and rational functions, exponential and logarithmic functions, and trigonometric functions and periodic functions. I mean, I think that all of those fall into the category of, yes, that's what you need to be able to know about in order to succeed in calculus. I think that people can pick and choose if they want to expand the course some with maybe it's the things that I listed. Maybe it's going back to vectors, or maybe it's matrices, or maybe it's parametric equations. But if we really are trying to get mastery, I think that makes, I mean, what they've done now makes sense in place of the things that were added on. More importantly, when it gets to the issue of the content, I think that although some people say it's a lot of Algebra 2, well, for better or for worse, there's a lot of overlap because we race through things, because it doesn't take the first time. We've not yet figured out how to teach for real mastery. I mean, why do we still do quadratics in Algebra 1, which is just a killer for everything? And so if we recognize that there are ways of adjusting these courses, that's great. But until that happens, it just because we do it in Algebra 2 doesn't mean that it's there and kids are really ready for it. So, there's that argument for it. Although, I contradict myself when I say that in the grand scheme of things, with all the Algebra 1 being done in eighth grade now and an effective integrated program in 9 and 10, we could easily have an 11th grade course in the calculus pathway that is this combination of Algebra 2 and pre-calculus, and it's doable in an hour a day. So there's all that going on, but most people say, okay, good, the College Board gave in. They cut it back to a manageable content. We couldn't teach all those things before. And I just keep saying, well, you didn't win the war yet. That was a battle we've won, but it's still the same test that doesn't measure up.
So I have a question though. Like, my job is to reimagine this whole piece.
Yeah.
We're preparing when I took AP in high school, so we're very familiar with AP and I did dual enrollment. And the key was a lot of, as we stated, you teach to the test, you have your test strategies, and you'll be fine on the test. Why are we rethinking the whole concept of a test? Why is it like and not application based? Why are they not taking something and designing something as a final piece? As opposed to, again, it's so antiquated that I just gotta, well, again, I'm not minimized, but I am. Bubble in some answers, get it out with boom, I'm done. But can I apply this? Can I use it in the real world? My undergraduate degree is in computer engineering. And we had a senior design project where we actually had to design something. For me, if we need to push the College Board, is what are students learning to do other than take a test? Because if it's to prepare you for college, and I've had opportunity to teach in the high school level and I've had opportunity to teach at college level. In the college level, it was more so thinking, how do you apply this knowledge? So really, we're not preparing you for college. We're preparing you for a test that could be used for some credit, as opposed to rethinking what is really going to be beneficial to a child, whether it's pre-calculus. I'm not going to jump to other subjects, fellas. But what are we preparing you for? I want to see a product come out of these courses. If you're using technology, harnessing this technology to produce something in 2 to 3 hours.
I just think that comes down to the teacher then, because I will say, I tell my kids, I want them to do well on the test. Obviously, I'm not going to teach them for a whole year. I don't think that one final test at the end is the end all be all. Kids have bad days, things like that. But so yeah, I do teach some of those strategies, but I tell them I care about so much more than that. I care about where they take what they're learning with me in their future. So I do as many projects as I can. We use the technology I teach them the calculators, the Desmos, all the online simulations, so that they really get that feel of, hey, I can see this visually, I can see it algebraically, I can see it geometrically, anything I can possibly do to have them really understand it. So I do think, I mean, I don't know how College Board could make that an investigative piece where they do something, but I think that's going to come down to the teachers and what they want their kids to be able to do. And hopefully none of them just want them to pass the test at the end and they actually want them to appreciate the math and what's behind it. But I think that's going to come down to them at the end.
But Jaleo, let's push on this. The College Board makes a lot of money. I may do a Google search to see how much. They can design this. Like, we can't keep giving people outs of, I don't know what they can. Literally, we can go on ChatGPT right now and type in, create a AP pre-calculus test. And before the end of this episode, we'll have a test.
Right.
So we can't keep saying it can't be done. Go ahead, Steve.
So this is so important. And it is, I mean, so I spent 2 hours on a Zoom conference with the advisory committee and with the key people at the College Board. And I raised exactly that point because, like, not surprisingly, like you, I want to change the system. I want to make everything work for me. Now, the last thing I want to do is be the spokesperson for the College Board or an apologist for the College Board. But anyone who's listening to this debate needs to understand that we all agree with what you're saying, Chris. However, the College Board says none of these advanced placement programs would work if the colleges didn't grant credit for it. Okay, so when I sit there and say, my goodness, the College Board, you guys own ETS. ETS is the hotbed of some of the most amazing assessment stuff going on in the United States. You're nodding because you know that. I mean, there are some of the best psychometricians anywhere. The psychometricians who think outside the box all work for ETS. And they have got constructive response items to die for. They have multiple selected response items that really get at understanding which of the following is, and you have to decide whether it's two of them or three of them or four of them and those kinds of items. And so when I say, why don't you apply that kind of technology to your assessment? I'm told, well, that's just too far removed from what in fact is the way it is assessed in the colleges. And so that's when I say, look, you need to give them an opportunity to move as well. You're asking us to buy into a test that we are holding our breath over even after some of these changes. And right now, it's not holding our breath. We're saying loudly and clearly, don't buy this test. This is a backwards move. Make the College Board show you what they're talking about. Give us a model test that honors these things. Or don't, but that's what they would say. And I don't know how to respond to that because, you know, I understand how conservative higher ed is in so many ways, particularly the math community within higher ed. And so with they're in a problem, I'm in a problem. You know, I wish that when it comes to pre-calculus, the College Board would say, you know, since this really is stepping into their turf, we're going to look two points worth for every 1 point worth of college, that is 2 points worth at the high school people and what they think and what they say. I mean, I can't tell you when this whole fight started, how many emails I got from people saying, they asked me, I reviewed it, I filled in all these questionnaires, and nothing that I suggested was listened to. Well, I mean, you know, that's just where we are. And so I'm trying to sort of say, how do we pick our battles? How do we recognize I'm not going to get everything I want? We never do. Which compromises make sense and which ones don't. And none of that is easy. But I'm with you still. If it doesn't serve kids, which means if it doesn't move high school math forward and it doesn't give more kids access to the stuff we're all saying, then what good is it?
And that's the thing. We keep going with this, as you mentioned earlier. We're going to jump, Rob and Chris, I'm sorry. We got to go to calculus and come back. We have this literally outdated track in high school, and every entity says it's not my responsibility to change that.
Right.
Hypothetically, if the AP College Board came out with a design mathematical course, folks would change. But everyone keeps saying that's not my thing, not my thing. And at the end of the day, we're all complicit in disenfranchising children. And when I say disenfranchising children, if we think about this AP pre-calculus course, I can tell you who will not be in that course. Majority of students who are multilingual, majority of students with disabilities, majority of students who identify as melanated, majority of students who identify as socioeconomically disadvantaged. and I haven't seen the data yet. That, and we know that going into the course. So College Board, are you purposely creating this, or are we willing to do something different?
And you know that in all those brochures, Chris, they claim that this is about giving more people access, that this is addressing the equity issues. And then we say, well, show us how. And they really, in my opinion, don't have a very strong answer beyond just, well, we said we're going to do it.
I want to go to Joel real quick. Joel, as a teacher in this space, what can other educators listening to this show do better to prepare more students who have been historically excluded get to these AP level courses? Because we got to reverse engineer the game also. And what would you recommend others do to help folks get in these courses?
So we're actually kind of in that predicament for next year. We don't know if it's COVID, different teaching styles or what, but we decided to go all in on making sure we have these differentiated classes that meet the kids where they are and can help them move forward, fill in some gaps. And we're hoping to see some real change next year. Right now, I think a lot of kids are falling through the cracks and just getting pushed through. We've had a few kids that were socially advanced and not academically. And they're just, I was talking to one of my kids today and she said, look, I don't get this. I'm never going to get this. Why should I even try anymore? I just want to give up. It's too hard. So how are we going to look at these kids and say, oh, you know what? Just stay on the path. I'm sure you'll be fine. Just keep doing the homework. Maybe you hit that wall and maybe you'll dig under and come out on the other side. But we're finding these kids aren't. So we said, we need to stop what we're doing. We can't just keep pushing. So we're creating some extra differentiation things that all of our ninth graders are going to go into, hopefully next year if it works out, and say, what can we do to help you? Do you need enriched? Do you need remediated? Can we try to push you to get you where you need to be so that you're going to be successful in the future? Because I think right now, the teachers are just trying to stay above water. We have been for 3 or 4 years, and we're finally catching our breath. And we're like, holy crap, what just happened? And how can we fix everything that happened? And I think we're frustrated, we're tired. And AP Pre-Calc was just the tip of the iceberg for me. So I was like, let's do this. But no, we really need to find out ways we can help not look at classes and look at kids.
And then I'm saying pre-calculus courses. I'm looking over Rob's shoulder. I don't know if you can see this. If you're listening, you can't see it, but watching, he has the book Culturally Responsive, Culturally Relevant Math Test. What are we doing to create these type courses? Like, we're creating new stuff, but we're not. What we're doing is taking the same old car and putting a new coat of paint on it and saying it's something new, but there's so much space and opportunity, College Board, and especially with the things that Steve has laid out, even with the topics within it, that we can do better. Someone literally chose every single topic and checked off on it, which that tells me someone has the ability to change the topics. Someone has the ability to check out for something different, but that tells me folks intentionally use that power to keep status quo and to maintain it.
And I want to start wrapping up this round with two last questions here. Really just about advice and kind of, Chris, kind of along the lines you started asking this. I'm thinking about people who are in the position at a school or at a district to make the decision of, are we going to offer this course next year or in 2 years or whatever? What advice do you have for them as they're thinking through this? And then also for advice for teachers, if they're having to teach this and they're unsure about how they feel about the College Board or all the politics of that, like what advice for those who are stuck teaching it or being asked to teach it?
I would say that leaders, heroes, would say, okay, my superintendent said we're going to teach it. I'm going to supplement it, and I'm going to make far greater use of technology than they allow. In other words, I'm going to treat it as I have more say over this than I think I have with the calculus test. Does that take guts? Yes. Does that take some collaboration? Yes. It means the two teachers who are teaching it both have to agree. What are they going to do? Fire both of them? They're going to replace both of them with people who couldn't even begin to do it? I mean, I think that's the way in which we do it. We're going to start by saying we need to put kids first and not the curriculum first and not just preparation for that test. But I want to say something else that I think is really important. We can talk about all these things all we want, but I want to put a bow around what Joel just said. When Chris pushed her and said, so, you know, what would we do that's different? I don't have all the answers, but I know that we cannot meet the standards in any way, shape, or form with 46 or 47 minutes a day. It just is not possible. I teach too many classes in too many places where one day I have 47 minutes and the next day I have 59 minutes. It is day and night. We have to have time. You cannot teach the given curriculum in less than an hour a day. I'll give you 56 minutes. Two, what Joelle said needs a bow around it. It's like there has to be enrichment and remediation built in for kids when those are appropriate. We can't just teach it and when the kids do terrible on the test and when they do awful on the formative assessment, well, that's it, too bad. You know, you're just going to fall through the cracks. If it means doing a better job with what we have time to do, then let's at least do that. She used the word differentiation. That word is disgusting. That word is bandied around so much in our business, and people don't understand it. And when teachers are told they need to differentiate more, they have a responsibility to go to their administrator and say, oh, I'm so glad you told me I need to differentiate more. You're so right. Can you come into my class tomorrow and show me how to do it? And it would just stop. Because the administrators, by and large, haven't a clue what that means. What it means to me is acknowledging that there are 24 different brains in the class, which means that those kids are processing the math in four or five different ways, and those kids are seeing and visualizing the math in four or five different ways. Differentiation says there's not one right way to get an answer, that the kind of instruction that works in kindergarten and in first grade is alternative approaches and multiple representations. It's the kids that struggle in seventh grade with sign numbers because it's only done on a number line. And no one ever talks about Tom Brady or whoever the local quarterback is losing 5 yards on the first play and gaining nine on the second play. All of a sudden, everyone knows they're 4 yards ahead of scrimmage. It is about vertical things and temperature. It is about different representations. And that becomes the tool in the same way that kids ignore the formal rules about assigning signs of absolute values and instead worry about what does it look like on a number line. And I think we have to prune the content. That's where we can start. And those are department-wide discussions that come out of departments that don't isolate, the departments that that provide collaboration. But I want to say one other thing, and that is that whenever we talk about high school, we know that middle schools can offset an amazing range of problems at elementary school. We know that the middle school curriculum, thanks to the College Board, is so good. It is so rigorous. It is so appropriate. It is less, but it is richer. It is well-designed. The trajectories are all there. No high school can offset a problematic or poor-taught middle school curriculum. If we want high schools to be serving kids, we need to send them kids who had a sixth, seventh, and eighth grade experience that worked, that was strong. I will believe that the very best math teachers in a middle school should be teaching sixth grade, absolutely flat out sixth grade. The worst middle school teachers, let them teach eighth grade. If I do sixth and seventh right, eighth grade sucks, I can pick it up in high school. But I cannot help a kid who had a terrible experience with cross multiply and divide and with equations and equivalent expressions and all those things that are the essence of sixth grade, unless it works, unless it's stronger. And so when middle school is stronger, then high schools can be stronger and we can serve a lot more kids. We've got the curriculum, at least in middle school. We have the issues of not enough time and of, in some places, inadequate quality because, again, there's no guidance, because there's no leadership, because there's no collaboration. We look the other way because we have a warm body in the class. Those are real problems that have to be addressed if we're going to cling to this belief that we've got to serve more kids across the board.
Yes, Steve, thank you. Bringing back to my original question about advice for teachers or admin, can I go to Chris and Joelle also? Like, what are your thoughts and where do we go from here?
I want to talk to a district or a leader who has across the board historically low performance in mathematics at the high school level. I want to challenge you. I want you, if you're across the board, let's say you're less than 30%, 20% proficiency across your high school, I want to challenge you to eliminate the current pathways and re-envision and try something totally different. What's going to hurt? You're already at 20, 30% proficiency. Can't get worse. And when I say reimagine it, I'm not saying dummy down math. Create a new rigorous experience, whether it's with data science, whether it's with coding is hot right now, and a lot of people are not harnessing that technology, whether it's still using problem solving, we can still integrate some of the topics from a calculus course, the algebra 2 course, trigonometry course. We can do better with statistical analysis. We create some financial literacy courses. Reimagine that MathMags experience in your high school trajectory pathway. Try it for 2 to 3 years and see what happens. You're already in the pits. I'm going to be honest, a miracle is not going to happen in the next 2 to 3 years. Try something radically different that's going to benefit a child. A child can be financially literate. A child can know how to code. A child can understand how to read and make sense of mathematics when they see it in the newspaper. And you can prepare them for something different and then go back and revisit the whole pathways piece that we've traditionally done. Someone needs to step out on a limb and do something different and show others this can benefit children and help them. So that's what I want to really hack. But I know someone said, oh, Chris, you know, I'm in this environment. I got a new superintendent. We got to try this pre-calculus thing out. What I want you to do is identify how can you get as many children as possible in this course and start looking intentionally at historically excluded populations and making sure you're preparing them for this course. I want you also to look at your other AP courses. Who is in that course and does that demographic match your lowest level courses that you offer? If it does not, I want you to, as a leader, could be a leader, you should be bold, to look at what systems are in place that are keeping kids out of this access. You cannot tell me year after year it's just the children. It can't be. It's the system. We need to be challenged to reinvest in how we reimagine these courses, what applications are we providing, how we harness the technology. I'm looking at this AP pre-calculus course, and you all correct me if I'm wrong. There are parts of the test where a graphing calculator is not permitted. I'll be honest. It's 2023. A child will always, I have an iPhone. I know you Android folks don't. You know, it's the iPhone team over here. They will always have a version of technology. And we're still creating mechanisms. Might as well, hey, give them the first graphing calculator. Let me see if that works or something. Like, it's 2023. We're still limiting the power of technology. Why? Because we can't design exams that can do what we need to do. It's time to think outside the box. I'm going to challenge as leaders in this math ed space. How are you designing your experiences so rich and so well this test is a formality for a child taking it? Or are you solely focused on this test and not preparing them for life beyond it? Because guess what? A child can pass. I would rather a child, and I used to tell my students also, I'd rather fail that standardized test at the end of the year and be successful in life. Because a lot of successful people in life that fail the test. I never told a story before. I took an AP history class in high school. Only took the course because it would boost my GPA. It was a senior. I was rocking. I was a cool kid. It boosted my GPA and I failed the crap out of that test. But guess what? I'm still Dr. Christopher J. Chatham. So again, if we're going to play the game. But at the end of the day, what are we preparing children for beyond the test, beyond graduation? Joel.
Yes, Joel, your last thoughts and advice.
I wish I talked as much as these guys, but I'm pretty brief and to the point of think all the time. But you guys make awesome points. And honestly, I can't really talk from the administrator role. So if I were an administrator leader, my advice to them is to wait it out, see where this goes, see if it is actually beneficial. Talk to people who know what you're doing. But from the teacher standpoint, I mean, I've been very upfront about my thoughts about this. I don't like AP pre-calc. Although, Steve, when I came into this, I said 3 units. And I was talking to my kids today because we were doing this, right? And they said, well, what's on this AP pre-calc? I told them, like, you've taught me half of that or 2/3 of that already. Sign me up for that course for my GPA boost, right? And the more I sit here and I listen, you really can. So if your kids come in knowing 2/3, you're already ahead of the game, right? You really can dive in and you can really show them where math can go because now you have we know you don't have 180, you have 160 days to really hone in on these 3 things. Your kids are going to be rock stars by the end. But my advice to the teachers, if I was told next year that I'm teaching AP pre-calculus, I don't care that I hate the idea of it. My kids are going to think that is the best class that could ever exist and that I love every part of it. And I am so excited to get to teach them AP pre-calculus and they are going to have the most fun in that class because your attitude is going to dictate exactly what happens with those kids. If you're miserable, you hate it. Every year I catch myself when I teach probability going, oh, I hate probability. And then I say, I cannot say that to this group of kids because they are going to hate probability. So go in with a positive attitude no matter what happens. Go home, complain to whoever you can complain to, your mom, significant other, your own kids. But leave your students out of it and make sure they know that you love it and you're there for them. So that's my advice for the teachers.
Wonderful. I think that's a great note to end on. Well, thank you all. That concludes this episode's discussion. You did a great job of tackling this complicated issue here, and I hope this gives teachers out there some good food for thought and some things to say when the idea of the AP pre-calc course comes up.
And now it's up to our listeners to continue this conversation. Talk with your colleagues, talk with your administration, talk with your upper level admin administration at central office level, and share what resonated with you, share this episode, and have those deeper conversations about what's going to happen within your school. Be sure to go to our Twitter at DebateMathPod to share more thoughts on this debate.
And again, huge thanks to all three of our guests. You were so thoughtful in this controversy that we're in at the moment around the College Board and AP Pre-Calc. Math is not separate from politics, and you were able to talk about both really well.
And thanks to all those who are listening. We hope you enjoyed and learned from this episode. Again, please, please, please continue this conversation because it's a very important conversation that needs to happen, I think, in every building across the country.
And as we wrap up, Dr. Childs, where can listeners find you?
Favorite Educator, favorite educator, Dr. Christopher J. Childs. You can follow me on all social media platforms, DRK Childs, DRK Childs. I put out some really cool content on TikTok, on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. You name it, I'm there. If it hasn't been invented, ChatGPT is invented, and I promise you I'll be there also. So check me out, DRK Childs.
Joelle, where can listeners find you?
Hi, you can find me on Twitter at JoelleCooper15.
And lastly, Steve, where can listeners find you?
You can find me at my email, which is sleinwand, LEINWAND, at AIR.org. You can find me at www.steveleinwand.com, my website with lots of things on it. And you can find me as well on Twitter. Just go search Steve Leinwand, and I'm the one that pops up.
Very good. Thank you all.
Want to learn more about incorporating debate activities into your math classroom? Go to luzniak.com/podcast to sign up for my mailing list and get your first set of example debate activities you could use with your students today. Go to luzniak.com/podcast.
Don't forget to reach out to us with comments and questions on debatemath.com or follow us on Twitter at DebateMathPod and follow along with hashtag DebateMathPod.
Rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts
or wherever you listen to this podcast. Your feedback is super important to us.
Well, that's all from us.
Looking forward to debating with you more next episode. Until next time, cheers.